We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, and we're returning with At Your Service. This is Jane Duker. You usually hear me on the roundtable on Friday afternoons, but once in a while I get to do At Your Service, and it's been an illuminating hour so far. We talked body cams in the first hour, and then we also talked about journalism with Scott Fawn, the publisher of the Missouri Times. And this hour is going to be no less jam-packed. This hour, first, we're going to be joined by Ed Clark, who is the president of the St. Louis Police Officers Association, who's here to talk about a very important topic to the citizens of the city of St. Louis, which is the sales tax that is on the ballot and up for a vote on Tuesday, November 7th. To increase salaries, among other things, increase salaries for police, firefighters, and other public safety issues. So we're going to talk to him. And then later in the hour, we're going to be joined by our own Kevin Killeen, which is always a joy. But he's going to kind of do the rundown on the Board of Aldermen's effort to decriminalize pot in the city of St. Louis. Very controversial measure that's being at least discussed and debated. And so he surveyed some of the board members, and so we talk about that for a little bit. And then finally, we're going to be joined by Joe Edwards, who is the owner of the iconic club, Blueberry Hill. And he's going to talk to us about the passing of Fats Domino, whose song, Blueberry Hill, his version of it, was what inspired the name. And I'm excited to have Joe come tell about his friendship and knowledge of Fats Domino and some of the other leaders in rock and roll. And Joe Edwards is sort of our musical history here in St. Louis. So looking forward to hearing about that. So right now, I'm excited to be joined by Ed Clark, who is the president of the St. Louis Police Officers Association. And by way of full disclosure, I've been working with the Police Officers Association on some of their governmental stuff. But he's here to talk to us about Prop P. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Now, you're an officer. How long have you been an officer with the police department?
I'm a 25-year veteran. I spent about 4 or 5 years in uniform and the last 20 as a detective. And about the last decade, I've worked in the homicide division.
So you've been busy.
We have been busy.
And it's been a rough time lately. You've had a lot going on.
Correct.
Yeah. So here we are. We have now, can you tell me how many police officers are in the department now? Give or take. I know it's hard any given day, but and how many officers down is the department?
Well, I know we're down 114. I think our authorized strength is just over 1,400.
And we're not there yet. So I'm, you know, let's explain. Prop P is going to be on the ballot Tuesday, November 7th, and it's a half-cent sales tax. And tell us what it's going to go for if it passes.
Well, if it passes, it'll raise about just short of $20 million. Of that money, two-thirds, or roughly $12.8 million, will go to the police department. That money's earmarked to increase salaries and benefits for all the policemen. We just got done finishing up our collective bargaining agreement for policemen and sergeants, and that will ensure that all policemen will get a raise of $6,000 across the board.
Which is incredibly important. And why not explain to our listeners why the pay disparity or the pay problem is at such a critical time right now for the city of St. Louis police officers?
Well, everything changed when the county passed Prop P. It's going to come January 1st. The county officers are going to see a 30% increase in their pay. Even before Prop P, we were already fighting. As you can tell, we're 114 down. We're already struggling to recruit and retain our experienced officers, get good officers in here. Actually, experienced minority officers. That's the group that's leaving the quickest right now. We're unable to retain them. They're going somewhere else. Now Prop P passes, and the salary goes up 30%. So if you're a young policeman, you want to get in law enforcement, just like everyone else, you're going to shop around. You're going to see where you're going to get your best pay and benefits. And that's where you're going to start applying. And the people, the best and the brightest, are going to go to those departments. And as you go down the scale, what's left over is going to be who's going to be applying for us if this doesn't pass. So,
and it's not just and sort of the, I think some people are unclear about the fact it's not just St. Louis County Police we're talking about. With Prop P, all of the municipal police departments were getting money and giving raises to their officers. So you're not just competing with St. Louis County.
That's correct. It's all the municipalities. And again, we were already struggling with recruitment problems and retention problems before Prop P passed. Now that it's passed, it's, and I'd give you an example, a lieutenant on the police department with, say, 15 years on. So he would be the person who would be the watch commander of the district at night. He'd be the commander, like my boss is Lieutenant John Green. He's the commander of the homicide division. His counterpart in the county, or my counterpart, a policeman in the county, once come January 1st with 15 years on, is going to be making the same amount as him.
Ah.
So that just tells you, without anything happening here,
the disparity.
Correct.
Yes. And so, you know, and so this has been, it was passed by the Board of Aldermen, and now it's going to the voters. And so, and I understand too, I mean, there's also, just to be clear too, that the firefighters will get an increase in their salary, the other first responders. And then there's also, with the corresponding use tax that will go along with the sales tax increase, there's, you know, community programs, other things that the Board of Aldermen feel will also help address crime and public safety in the city of St. Louis as well.
That's correct. Firemen have a pay parity with us, so they'll also receive a $6,000 across the board. The circuit attorney's office, been a lot of discussion with them now that the office has changed, and where they're having trouble retaining their attorneys, they're going to get $1.5 million to step up their efforts. We need a strong circuit attorney that's able to prosecute crimes here in the city.
So. And it, yes, so it's definitely... it's a challenging issue, and I think that I know that people are often talking about that they're being overtaxed and whatnot. But I mean, this is something that needs to happen now. And if it could come out of the budget, it would have.
I agree with you. I mean, I think when the mayor came in, she was tried to find the $20 million that we needed. Her, the legislative leaders here in the city, were unable to find it, and this was her solution, was Prop P. So we hope it passes. We think, without it passing, that we're going to easily lose 100 more policemen and be 200 down. Mm. That would be devastating for the city. And I just go back to the first, and I don't really want to talk about the protest, but the first 2 weeks of the protest, the police department, the city, we prepared for the worst. We had all hands on deck. Everyone was working. Everyone was in uniform.
12-hour shifts, right?
12-hour shifts. And the neighborhoods were saturated with policemen, just like the downtown or where the protests were happening were saturated with policemen. One thing that was noticeable, I didn't look up what the stats are, but just by listening to the radio, there was less call-outs for the homicide division. There was less what we call assault first, shootings, carjackings, robberies. All those things seemed to go down. When we were fully staffed, all hands on deck, crime went down during those first 2 weeks that we were all there. Just by having policemen on the street.
Just a presence.
Correct.
The presence matters.
I believe so. There's no other way. Once we started scaling back, getting more to normal, now you've seen kind of an uptick, or, you know, the way it was before the protest, or maybe even a little bit higher. So, I mean, it's a struggle every day to provide police services here when you're 100 policemen down. I mean, we want to be in the neighborhoods. We want to be doing community policemen. We want to be out there. But when you're 100 policemen down... That's hard to do.
You triage.
You're 20 short in each district, you know.
Oh, I mean, when you put it that way, if you look at any district, how many districts are there?
There's 6 districts right now.
And so at any given time, you're 20 shy. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It really is, and it's frightening. And you know, when you're on 12-hour shifts, I mean, you all get tired. I mean, so to have the kind of presence that you think actually had an impact would exhaust you beyond... You know, I mean, the department couldn't handle the 12-hour shifts indefinitely.
No, we need to hire more people. It's not feasible long-term to pay people over 4 hours overtime every day.
So. Well, you bring up a very good issue, because I think there's been a lot of discussion surrounding the overtime issue. And, I'm being told by my producer that maybe we should take a break, which is fine, because then we can start, you know, talking about this on the other end. And I'm here with Ed Clark, who's the president of the St. Louis Office Officers, Police Officers Association. I'll get that out. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX, and join us after the break.
local news, award-winning news, St. Louis's news, traffic and weather. KMOX, depend on it.
And we're back. This is Jane Duker, and we are at your service on KMOX on a Sunday afternoon. You're probably used to hearing me on Friday afternoon from 2 to 4 with Mark Reardon, the round table, and then we usually have some fun stuff on Friday afternoon. But every once in a while, I get to come to you and bring some issues and on At Your Service, and I really enjoy it. And we've had a, jam-packed hour and a half. And when we last broke, we were talking with Ed Clark, who is a 25-year veteran of the St. Louis City Police Department, Metropolitan Police Department, and he's also president of the St. Louis Police Officers Association, who is supporting Proposition P, which is going to be on the ballot Tuesday, November 7th, and it is a half-cent sales tax increase that will go to, a large part, will go to police raises. It will allow officers of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department a $6,000 raise across the board, plus the benefits that go along with that. And we were talking in the last segment, we were talking about how the pay disparity has gotten so dramatic because of the passage of Prop P in the county and the disparity between not only St. Louis County Police, but municipalities within the county. The disparity between the pay is starting to drain officers. And I know that you've already seen some departures. And I know that as part of this exercise in determining how to address the pay disparity, you all did a survey of your members. And that wasn't, so it was no longer sort of academic. It was, look, we've got officers who are already looking. And what did I read that if when given the pay disparity that's coming January 1, how many of your members, like what percentage of your members are likely to be looking elsewhere?
Right. Before, while we were doing our bargaining with the city, when no set raise was done yet, we put out a survey to all our members, and they answered by email. And we found out that about 70% were interested in looking for a job elsewhere. We found that about 10% of our members had already applied, some of which who've already had jobs or accepted right. jobs in other departments. And just to break it down into thirds, the top third of the police department would all be eligible to retire right now, myself included.
Okay.
Your bottom third probably doesn't have too much invested here yet. They may not own a home. You know, they may right. have 4 or 5 years
they're
here.
They're not invested in the pension. They're right. not, you know, but they've gotten great training.
Correct. They got great training here in the city. And then you got your middle third who may, you know, some would say they're kind of stuck here, that they want to work for their pension. But just take the top 300 policemen in seniority are eligible to retire. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I or any one of my peers with more than 20 years on go work in St. Louis County?
Retire out of more? Yeah, retire out of the county and or out of the city and then go over to the
and
county.
And go work in the county. A lot of us are young enough where we could work 20 years in the county after working 20 years here.
Now, if I remember you telling me at one point that when you were hired, that you had just come off the Metropolitan Police Department had come off sort of a hiring freeze, and that there was when you got hired, there was a lot of police officers hired at your level at that time.
There was, starting in about 1992 through, it seems like 96, 97, our numbers were up, and I believe we had about 1,700 policemen at that time. My first years in uniform, I rode in a two-man car in my district. I had a partner every night. If he was on vacation, someone else rode with me.
And the days of two cops in a car are long gone, aren't they? I mean, they're few and far between.
They are. And I think just the problems you can address when you have a partner, and especially a regular partner with you, are a lot more. Together, you get to know. I worked in the second district, which has now changed somewhat. But I knew everyone. Where I worked,
I
knew all the business owners. I knew all the kids, and I still to this day have kids, you know, come up to me, or not kids anymore, you know,
right.
young men in their 30s, you know, that say, ask me, you know, hey,
how you doing?
You? Right. Hey, thanks for helping me out of this problem or this situation. And we were able to get in the, you know, community and do that, get out of the car and talk to people and take care of problems
before
that happen
escalate.
In a neighborhood.
Right.
Where now, we're not having that ability to because we're just too short-staffed. A lot of these men working now, they just run from call to call. Just assignment, they're trying to triage that and go on to the next call because there may be something more serious. Someone may have been robbed. Someone may have been carjacked. We have to get there, You know, someone has to get the information. Other policemen have to get to there, try to find, you know, the suspect or find the victim's
vehicle.
Just
feel safer if you have a partner with you? I mean, on all kinds of levels, one, that you get another perspective on a situation. You have somebody right there that you both can, you know, you can help adjust each other. And, you know, I hear a lot about de-escalating and all those kind of things. When you're by yourself and you're scared, that's a little more challenging, it would seem to me.
It is, and I don't want to say you're scared if you're by yourself, but with two people, you're just more, you can be more at ease.
And more proactive.
You don't have to worry about, you got someone else helping you watch what's going around. And you can take the time to talk to someone to really communicate with them and find out what the problem is, and while your partner watches everything else that's going around. And you get to have those one-on-one conversations with people to really find out what do they need. You know, they called the police or the police showed up. What do you need from the police department to help you now? And some, you know, people we deal with, sometimes when they call, they're upset. You know, it's hard to
get out of
people.
You don't see them at their best.
Right. It's hard to get out of it. And just to have the ability to sit down and talk to people about what, you know, what their problem is and work for a solution to fix it, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the police want to feel that, too. They want community policing. They know how it can help and how, like you say, better assess a situation, better get to know the community so that you can serve them better. So the interesting thing, too, I saw, I've seen a lot on social media, that your county brethren are supporting Prop P for you, and they're urging their friends in the city. And I was really heartened by that. And when asking some of my county police friends, you know, why are you on board with Prop P? They're like, look, we all don't do well if our brethren down in the city aren't doing well. We don't do well as a region. We don't. You guys do a lot of joint stuff together, don't you?
We do. Both organizations are members of the, you know, Missouri Fraternal Order of Police. I also serve on that board as a sergeant at arms. So the county police have their, just like we're the city police association, there's the county police association. They're a member of that. And also, you know, we're all members of the National Fraternal Order of Police. So we want to see each department, you know,
thrive.
The county police also, hey, them and their families, even if they may or may not live in the city, but if they don't, they still come here. They go to Blues games. They go to Cardinals games. Right. They go to the Muni. They want them and their family and their friends to feel safe when they're here. They want to see us as a department and as a community succeed.
And I think over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, especially since the unrest in Ferguson in 2014, that you all do a lot of joint policing together, whether it be Metro, whether it be, you know, responses to protests, or, you know, when you guys are stretched and you need help, or the Highway Patrol comes in. I mean, you all are trying to collaborate and coordinate. And so it matters, right, that you have some parity with your brethren.
Correct. Like presently, the Bombing and Arson Division is made up of city and county officers, the helicopter, aviation.
Oh, wow.
That's city and county, and I believe St. Charles also. So it's a group. And they're looking to expand on that. It's like we have the major case squad, which is made up from
absolutely
the region. So we're trying to find the best people, and they're looking for other ways that we can work with St. Louis County, like the Metrolink. There's city and county officers on there. So.
And you do better together. I know that's like a term that, oh my gosh, but you know, I mean, but that's going to be happening more. And as you all get more specialized, and you know, now it's interesting. I mean, the two cops, I mean, I've seen pictures of equipment. I mean, you all need help with equipment too. It's not just salaries. And I know that Prop P doesn't necessarily address that because pay disparity is your number one issue. But you know, there are still other needs that the city are going to have to address, and we're trying to get to them, but Prop P is first.
They are. We're trying to buy new radios for the department, and I know it's been, I believe it's been taken out of the budget several years, but that's close to $6 million for new radios that would offer GPS. So your radio would have a GPS on it, just like your smartphone. So if a policeman, we couldn't find him, he didn't answer his radio suddenly. Right now, we can't find that policeman. We just got to drive around and hope we get lucky and find his car or find him.
I mean, in this day and age, that is really mind-boggling to me, that you all, you know, aren't GPS, so people can find you. That is mind-numbing.
That's a definite need. Our computers, we need an upgrade, you know, in our computers here at the police department. You know, we're falling behind in technology that way. That's where we need more resources, too. There's been talk, you talked in the last hour about body cameras, and there's people talking about that, about this, you know, called free trial. I mean, we found out, we know that's not a,
there's it's
no
never
such
free.
Thing as a free trial.
You guys have learned there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Correct. So we know that we're going to have to hire more people. We're going to have to just to deal with all that data if we go to body cameras. And
well, just to watch the footage. That was the one thing that when I was talking to this gentleman. I mean, if you've got 1,100 officers that, let's say they tape 4 hours. I mean, and that would be low, maybe. 4 hours. Somebody has to watch all of that. A human being who has to determine whether that's evidence and whether that's something that would be, you know, need to be kept or need to be flagged or need to be dealt with. And I mean, I can't even begin to think how much personnel is going to be needed for that.
That is, then people are going to have to deal with, the public's going to want that information released. We're going to have people to deal with what gets released, what doesn't.
How it's stored.
Correct. So I was reading about them too, and there's technology out there that through a body camera, it's watched in real time, like through our...
like your smartphone or your computers or...
Well, it's analyzed... trying to think of what our crime center is.
The real crime center?
The real-time crime center could mm-hmm. monitor that, and they could use stuff like facial recognition. They could read license plates off that. So say a policeman got a call for a shooting, a mm-hmm. homicide scene, and two or how many ever policemen show up to that scene, and their body cameras would be on. They'd be taking pictures of the people that are on there on the scene before they leave. It would tell that policeman, that guy is... This is his name. We have him on record.
Right. And he may know the victim because they live, he's a neighbor and they can analyze. That is, yeah. See, so I know everybody wants the technology. It's not, it's how it's going to get done. Right. But you're right. All of that costs money.
And just see if you were walking, just a policeman walking into the Quick Trip to get a cup of coffee and your camera's on and it reads, hey, this guy's wanted for, a violent felony. This
there
guy's
it is.
Wanted for a robbery. It's going to tell you in real time. They're going to be able to tell you that. Now, some of the people who want body cameras may not want something like that being done. But I think if we want to really move forward and use the tools that are available to us, that's technology that we need to look at that's really going to make our job better.
And
for
efficient.
Me, as an investigator, a lot of times when the initial policemen show up at the crime scenes, there's 40 people there. Well, by the time the homicide detectives get there, even 5 minutes later,
they've all scattered.
And now we have to go by
identifying witnesses.
Correct.
Absolutely.
So it would be a big help to us. So.
Well, I really appreciate you being on. This is Ed Clark, who's the president of the St. Louis Police Officers Association, and he's here. And they're supporting Prop P, which is on the ballot November 7th. You can pick up a sign, I'm sure, on hand. At the Police Officers Association if you want to support. And I wish you good luck. I hope you guys get your raises. And so anyway, this is Jane Duker. We're at your service. And when we get back, we'll have Kevin Killeen and Joe Edwards.
Monday night, and the Blues host the LA Kings to wrap up the first month of the season. I'm Kelly Chase, and get those radios locked in for the pregame show at 6:30 p.m. Face off at 7 right here on your Voice of the Blues, KMOX.
When we're back, this is Jane Duker on At Your Service on a lovely Sunday in St. Louis, and I am thrilled to have our own Kevin Killeen here to get us updated on kind of an interesting story happening down as if they're not all interesting at the Board of Aldermen, but
they all are not. We are so happy that this bill was introduced because it gives us something to talk about, something to write about. Alderwoman Megan Green, no matter what you say about her, she's never boring.
So what is the latest...
She's introduced her bill this past Friday that would allow the sale of marijuana in the city. Hopefully, she says, so it can be taxed and lift the city's revenues. Her bill says city police would no longer enforce state and federal laws against marijuana. They just turn a blind
eye. Any form of it. So like growing, manufacturing, using, like all form, everything. So police will be enforcing none of that.
Well, I don't want to make a blanket statement because I haven't read the fine print, but I know this. You, Jane Duker, in the city, if this were to pass, could walk into a corner store, buy some marijuana, just like you were buying a pack of Wrigley Spearmint gum. And then the argument is the city could get millions of dollars in taxing that. Now, this, of course, touches off many questions of social, moral, criminal, mm-hmm. budget questions.
Absolutely.
So it's a rich story. But it was introduced Friday, and we have some reaction. What would you guess the reaction is?
I would imagine at best it's mixed, but I look forward. So do you have a montage of other Board of Aldermen members' responses and positions on this bill?
Yeah, here we go. Most of the people right off the bat are dubious of this.
I would not be supporting it. due to religious beliefs.
And that's no way to raise money. That is no way to raise revenue by indulging in drug activity.
We have a lot of issues right now in the city, and I'm not 100%. This is the time right now to address this.
And those are just a few opinions, but there are other nuances. For instance, one of the provisions of this marijuana bill is if you're an employer, Jane, you could not say to your employees, no pot on the job. And Alderman Vaccaro said, well, wait a minute. If I run a construction company and we're building a 20-story building, do I want my construction workers up there, you know, getting high in their lunch hour? And then,
what about driving children to school on a bus in the city of St. Louis? Do we want them to be able to smoke pot and not have the Board of Education be able to say anything about that?
Yeah, and even Alderwoman Kara Spencer, who says let's raise chickens, she's very liberal-leaning, usually sympathetic to Megan Green's proposal. She says she's got a concern that we're setting people up for arrest. Come on into the city and buy pot, and then you get on the highway to go home, and the highway patrol would pull you over, and it's still illegal.
Yeah, it does make it difficult when you're doing these things not in a regional or even a statewide manner, because I think the state legislature has been struggling with this issue. It's gone through, you know, there have been bills passed, you know, in one house or out of a committee that have never made it through. We've tried initiative petitions. I mean, I think a lot of people believe that this ought to be a statewide issue as opposed to, again, having a pot sanctuary city. So I guess that's an idea. The one thing I want to picture too is, so we're going to grow it here, and how will that work? So if people are going to start growing it, you don't think that there would be dangerous activity that would, you know, be attracted to greenhouses with pot?
Well, I guess the argument is, it's like if you took away Al Capone's prohibition, then Al Capone would not be that powerful anymore. I mean, if anybody can grow it, why would the criminals be that attracted to somebody who's just happens to have 10 stalks in their backyard? They could grow it themselves, or
buy it
in the store without risking
arrest.
Right,
and I think that if done properly, legalization has happened and is likely to happen more. I think it's one of those issues of, it's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it. And so I think that, I think it needs a lot more thought. I think that, and we have a federal government that was previously not as hostile and was interested in not enforcing federal laws. I'm not sure that this Justice Department feels the same way about that anymore. And the bottom line is, and I think the reason why prosecutors have been opposing this on the state level is because they want some clarity under federal law that, in fact, you know, police officers and other law enforcement officials who are not enforcing the law would not be in trouble under federal law. And so, you know, we could have Jeff Sessions coming in and saying no sanctuary.
I've got some cuts here from people in favor of it, but let me just say one more thing, that among those against it, Alderman Sam Moore, who lives in one of the toughest crime-ridden neighborhoods, he says in his neighborhood, the criminals actually shut down blocks so they can have open drug markets. So he knows the problem of drugs. He says, you know, he's a minister and he's against it on religious grounds, but he said, socially, we don't want to be making money off of people just sitting around being tranquil, you know, just not accomplishing anything, just doing drugs. And, you know, that's a big argument. You and I are parents, you know, we tell our kids, you know, get out there and do your checklist every day. When you check everything off after a productive day, that's your euphoria. That's the greatest high in the world. It's not just sitting around the shortcut with marijuana.
Right. I mean, you know, again, you know, is there medical marijuana? There's a lot out there. CBD oil. There's a lot of benefits. But yeah, I mean, this idea of, wow, it would be a utopia in the city of St. Louis, I guess, under her view of the world.
All right. Well, here are the supporters. A couple of them. We have a couple of aldermen who are for this right now, for marijuana in the city.
I don't know if it'd be the total answer, if it'd be the total savior, but I think it would really, really help generate some money.
We could make a lot of revenue just off of growing seeds. We have a lot of open land.
That's the biggest argument here, millions, potential for millions in money. And also the other argument in favor is it'll free up the police. Instead of chasing after the guy with the nickel dime bag, go catch a murderer, do something big. That's the argument.
Well, and you know, I suspect that the police probably aren't doing the enforcement efforts on possession of pot as they, you know, would otherwise be doing because of the limited resources. So I'm not sure that this is this may be a little bit of a solution looking for a problem. However, I guess if you decriminalize something, yes, that would potentially indicate. But I think there's a lot of other crime that's replacing it. And I think when we're talking about crime fighting efforts, there's a lot of different things that I think people could look at before we do this. But why not? It's worth talking about.
Yeah, and I don't know if it'll get beyond the talking stage, because here's the final word from the Board of Aldermen. It's going to a committee. It's not the, you know, when a bill's introduced, before they can all vote on it, it has to go to a smaller group that can pass it or hold it up, a group of about 8 or 10 people. And the committee that it's been assigned to is not friendly. It's not the first choice of Alderwoman Megan Green. She wanted the Public Safety Committee, which she said she thought they'd pass it out. But it's been assigned to the Legislative Committee, whose chair, Alderman Joe Vaccaro, has children on the police department. He's very skeptical about whether this is going to get out. And I've heard from other people who are on that committee, I don't know if this is going
to
get out.
Well, and as with other issues, well, maybe we ought to take this to the state level. And this is the thing. I think a lot of people would argue that no matter what is done here, it would violate state law and potentially federal law. So until those issues get worked out, I think maybe the city could spend time on other pressing issues. But it always is interesting to have a discussion.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Jane.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Oh, always good to have Kevin Killeen here. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX 1120.
Stay connected. Stay informed. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. KMOX. Depend on it.
And we're back. This is Jane Duker on At Your Service on KMOX, and I'm thrilled to have our next guest, the famous owner of Blueberry Hill in the U City Loop, Joe Edwards. And so thank you for being with us, Joe. So let me know, with the passing of Fats Domino, tell us, how did Fats Domino inspire you?
Well, he took a version of a song called Blueberry Hill. It was a big band song in the 1940s, and in 1956, sang with his beautifully lilting voice, a version that like no one had ever heard before, and it resonated with all the world, not just America, and it resonated with me also. And that phrase, you know, I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill, stuck with me as it did with many people at that time. And
you said,
I figured,
that's
well,
it.
With my big record collection of 30,000 45 RPMs and 12,000 78 RPMs, that if that came to me that quickly as far as what to name a new restaurant and music club that I wanted to open as a young person, there must be a better song. So I kept going through record after record after record and looked through about 15,000 song titles and figured, no, my first impulse was right. I should name it Blueberry Hill.
So when did you get to meet him?
Well, the first meaningful time was in 1986. At the first Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony that was held at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City. And it was a magical night because that was the very first class. And all the greats were there, from Fats Domino to Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, the Everly Brothers. Elvis was already gone. Buddy Holly was already gone. James Brown was there, and Ray Charles was there.
Oh, wow.
It was just an incredible night. And to be able to talk to Fats Domino and James Brown and the Everly, my table was Chuck Berry, the Everly Brothers, and me. I mean, what a table at the Waldorf.
So what was Fats Domino like?
He's always been the easiest going, soft-spoken man in show business, not just in music. Very gentle soul. He was 5'5" tall and, you know, fairly rotund, I guess, and that's why the nickname Fats was
hence the name, yeah.
Yeah, part of his name from all those early years. But to meet a hero, one of the founders of rock and roll, I mean, Chuck Berry is the father of rock and roll, but then the foundation was laid with a bunch of them, and he's one of them. Amazing how he started. He left school at the age of 14 and just played piano and sang for $3 a week in those days. But in 1949, he sang a song called The Fat Man and was signed by Imperial Records, and it made the the R&B charts, the rhythm and blues charts, in a big way, and sold a lot of records. And then he had hit after hit. He probably had a dozen hits before he broke through to the wider audience on the pop charts and all. In 1956, when his version of Blueberry Hill came out, it was the biggest selling song of his career, and it just stayed on the charts forever.
So we're here with Joe Edwards of Blueberry Hill talking about how Fats Domino inspired him in his restaurant. So how did he feel, Joe, about you naming your restaurant after his song?
He was happy. He was so shy in a way, but he just smiled and just said, "That's wonderful. That's great." I mean, he just appreciated the respect that showed that I had for him and his abilities, musical abilities. And everybody that ever worked with him loved him. I mean, he and Chuck Berry were great friends, and so were the others in that whole first class of rock and roll greats.
One can't help feel that we're hitting the end of an era with the passing of the likes of Chuck Berry and Fats Domino. When was the last time you got to talk with Fats Domino?
The last time I flew down to New Orleans with Chuck Berry to meet up with Fats Domino, Little Richard, and Jerry Lee Lewis. And for two afternoons, the four of them, the foundation of rock and roll, and then plus Elvis, but the four of them sat and talked each afternoon and just reminisced about those early days and the triumphs and the trials and tribulations in their case, in Fats's case, and Chuck's case, you know, in Little Richard's case, being African-American, you know, going to separate restaurants, separate hotels and motels and all. But it was just fascinating. It was just fascinating. But they talked about that, but they also talked about, you know, all the great times. And I played this club, and I played this hall, and I played this festival. And they would always tell jokes.
You were the literal fly on the wall. Now, every picture I've ever seen of Fats Domino, he had the most beautiful, warm smile.
Oh, he did, and always did. And that wonderful flat top, too.
Absolutely. I mean, did he keep the flat top? I mean, as long as you knew him, did he always have the flat top? Did it stay?
He had it all the way through. Until the later years, he started wearing a kind of a captain's hat, somewhat similar to Chuck Berry's. Not exactly the same.
But kind of.
But he had a cap.
So why don't you tell me, we'll move on a little bit. I want to just hear how the U-City Loop is doing.
Oh, yeah. It's the safest city street in the Midwest, except for that one 20-minute period where a couple people threw rocks. It's been just wonderful.
Good.
And it's a great 24-hour safe neighborhood. We're selling out concert after concert at the Pageant, Del Mar Hall, and Blueberry Hills Duck Room. And the new stores that have opened, the new galleries and retail stores just in time for the holidays is pretty exciting.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.